Looks like one of the dishes that I ordered caused this effect. As soon as the buffs started to land on me in droves, I stopped keeping track of them. Clearly a mistake. I copied Evelyn's pose and tried to control the upsurge of adrenaline. The capsule did its job well. Right now, I felt like I could turn the whole world upside down, run a marathon, tear hellfire apart with my bare hands, or punch Garenika's face in. Yep. The main thing now was not to lose it, and not to allow myself to express any emotions. In my case, attacking another player would mean returning to the mines, and was to be avoided at all costs. Unlike buffs, which could be canceled at will, there was no such easy option for debuffs. I lost all interest in Evelyn, in the food, and the surrounding world, and turned into a statue. I'm a lump of rock, which sees and feels nothing. I'm a windmill, through which the wind blows without toppling it. I'm...
Mayen, please, drink this.
I came to myself as a waiter shook me by the shoulder and handed me a glass containing a liquid of some kind. There was still 7 minutes of the berserker left, so it took some effort to suppress my desire to punch the waiter in the face and instead focus on what he was saying.
Please, drink this. It will remove the debuff.
With some difficulty and shaking hands, I poured the liquid down my throat. It burned, but my head cleared straight away. The overwhelming impulse to act left me, and I could look around with normal eyes. Where did all these people come from? There were two waiters standing in a line, a plump dwarf wringing a chef's hat in his hands, an elven lady in a luxurious dress, and a herald. That was all, aside from Evelyn, who was warily examining my face.
"Mayen, how are you feeling?"
The tension was broken by the herald's question. The crowd had exploded. The waiters were shouting threats at the chef, the lady at the waiters, Evelyn at the lady, and only the dwarf stood silent and downcast, his eyes on the ground. "What exactly happened here?" I asked the herald in return. "Why did I end up with the berserker debuff?"
"A chain of coincidences," came the chef's whisper through the surrounding din. "Who would have thought that mixing Illix and Carpatosses, while washing them down with Swanna and snacking on Sherpalis, could result in a berserker? This is pure alchemy, and I am no expert in that. No one before you has ever ordered such an original collection of dishes, so totally unsuitable to each other."
"Yeah, that's me, all right. Fear the shaman who has landed a freebie."
"Mayen, could I have a moment of your time?" said the herald in an official tone.
Everyone around me immediately fell silent. No one wanted to interrupt a herald.
"Please sign Form 12.4A to submit an official complaint about a premeditated attempt to make you cause damage to bystanders and send you back to the mines."
At this news, the lady in the dress gave a subdued shriek and went pale. I didn't even know that a player's avatar could lose color, something to remember.
"This complaint will be examined in the course of an hour. The minimal punishment for this offense, stipulated by the law on prisoners of the Malabar Empire and Barleona, and consequently the real world, amounts to a year-long confinement in the mines. The punishment will be applied to the executive manager of the Golden Horseshoe Tavern."
At this, the elven lady turned a shade whiter, which previously seemed impossible.
"And to the chef who cooked these dishes. The form has already been filled out. All you have to do is add your signature."
A text with signature button appeared before my eyes. The dwarf didn't lift his head, and everyone else froze, expecting my decision. "Why am I not on this list?" I asked the herald after reading the statement. "I was the one that chose the dishes. No one was exactly force-feeding me here. This means that I'm as much to blame as these two." I nodded towards the chef and the manager.
"According to the rules of sensory establishments," volunteered Avalit, "the checking of the dishes and their combinations is the responsibility of said establishment. Even a crazy combination like the one you ordered should have been checked for compatibility and any eventual negative results. Those who fail to follow procedure will be punished. From what I can remember, this is the 9th time this sort of thing has happened. Am I right?"
He looked questioningly at the pale-faced elven manager. The latter was only capable of giving a weak nod and swallowing.
"The Golden Horseshoe values its clients too much to permit itself such errors."
I read over the statement once again, looked at the dwarf, the elf, Evelyn, and the herald, found the small refuse button, and, with a swift move of my virtual hand, pressed it without hesitation.
"Please explain your choice," asked the herald, his words devoid of any emotion.
Even the usual ringing in his voice seemed subdued. "I've done time at the mines, and I know what it's like. You have to be a complete bastard to wish ill towards someone who has tried to achieve perfection with his creation. I don't need this."
"Your choice has been made."
There was a clap of the portal, and the herald sped away to his other errands.
"You're fired,"
the manager, who had now come to herself, hissed to the chef.
"I want you out of my sight and out of the tavern this very second."
"Will you let us eat and to talk in peace already?"
Evelyn got their attention by leaning over the table and banging a knife on a glass.
"Please sort your problems out after my meeting."
After throwing me a meaningful gaze, the manager departed. The waiters blurred into the scenery, and the chef simply vanished. He was probably automatically removed from the building.
"It was a mistake to let it go," chided Avalit,
as soon as everyone was gone.
"She will still be fired. The owner will not stand for such a disgrace. This tavern's reputation has taken a serious blow in any case. When it comes to it, don't agree to anything less than 3 free meals a day for a year. You can send the request within the next 7 days. They will agree to all of your demands. I'm sorry that I've become the unwitting cause of this situation. Nothing would have happened had I not invited you here. But let's not lose any more time. The map. I really need the full version. The change in Cartus locations has meant an automatic update of all the maps, so old maps have not become obsolete. I won't ask how you got it. I'll just say that I need it. What would you ask for it?"
"This is a very abrupt jump." Now it was my turn to smile. "From fighting the berserker debuff to selling the map. Please, let me catch my breath a little. I never thought that the map could interest you quite that much, so I haven't thought of what I could ask in return. What can you offer?"
"It's not very nice to try to shift responsibility onto others.
How am I supposed to know what it is exactly you might need? Are you suggesting that I should decide instead of you?
You've missed the mark in trying to appeal to my pride. Unlike me, you know very well just how much this map is worth, so we are on very unequal footing here. After all, you've most likely already decided what you're prepared to pay for the second half, so there's no point beating about the bush. Make your offer, and I will agree or decline.
Are you feeling so completely unperturbed when talking to one of the most influential players in the game?
Evelyn had adopted a familiar, informal manner and was addressing me more directly now.
One gets the feeling that speaking to players of my level is something you do every day. Emperor, heralds, almost all the players that I know start to worry, stutter, or confuse their words when speaking with someone of my standing. You, on the other hand...
Have I understood you correctly that you have no intention of making an offer? I interrupted the leader of the future best clan of Cartus.
1 million gold, Evelyn finally decided. That's excluding the compulsory 30% that, as I know, you get deducted from every payment.
1 million gold for a copy of the map? This isn't just a good deal. It's the deal of the century.
But I have one condition.
Evelyn brought me down to earth.
We sign an agreement that no one else, except you, is to use this map. After this, it couldn't be sold, gifted, or exchanged. I don't wish to see another clan in Cartus in possession of this information. This is my offer.
I agree. I didn't even have to think about this deal. 1 million gold for a bunch of virtual numbers is a very good investment.
Skill increase, +2 to trade, total 9. Achievement earned, money bags level, 1. 9 transactions worth over 1 million until the next level. Achievement reward, the amount of money dropped by mobs has increased by 10%. This ability affects any players under your command. You can look at the list of achievements in the character settings.
I didn't think there existed a man capable of surprising me twice.
A pleased Evelyn stretched in his armchair after putting away the full copy of the Cartus map I gave him.
After Beatwick and the opening up of Cartus, everyone forgot that dragons have returned into the game, and you are directly connected to this development. You even know one of them. And then, the map. You are simply a mine of surprises. I have a proposal for you. If you're able to surprise me a third time, I'll give you a present. This has no time limit. You can take forever if you like. I'm just curious if you'd manage it a third time.
Forever is just too long.
I prefer to act in the moment.
With that, I opened my sack, took out the Eye of the Dark Widow, uncovered its properties, and put it on the table before Evelyn. I'd been intending to start showing off the eye for some time, since I had to start gathering the team to complete this quest, so now was as good a time as any. The Dark Legion's leader's hands jerked in a grasping movement towards the eye, and his face turned into one big question. How? But he quickly controlled himself and regained his impassive demeanor.
In just 2 days you will receive the promised present.
After a pause, Evelyn asked,
How much?
It's not for sale. I'd like to try this myself.
Then I propose an alliance. As soon as I cross over to Cartus, only competent players will remain in the clan. We can help you do the quest. Naturally, all the loot will be yours, and I'm prepared to pay for my clan to be included. Think about it. No need to decide now. Making an alliance with the first clan on Cartus would bring many benefits.
I'll definitely think it over, I promised Evelyn, and returned to my food. At the tavern's exit, I was met by a respectable-looking goblin, the owner of the place, by the look of it. After a brief bout of bargaining, I was granted the opportunity to come to the tavern 3 times a day for 2 years. I could also bring up to 3 people with me. Keeping in mind the buffs one could gain in the tavern, I considered this a good investment for my future clan. Speaking of the clan, with all these meetings, I completely forgot that I had been planning to drop by the registrar. While there was still time, it was a mistake I had to quickly remedy. The mark in the shape of an azure sea thistle looked simply magnificent on my cloak, and the see-through flower before my name indicated that I belonged to a clan. The Sea Thistle's clan has made its debut in Barleona. At first, I wanted to pick a serious and intimidating name, like Wings of Terror, Night Legion, or Dragon. But then some common sense clawed its way back. Why? Who was it that I was trying to impress? And for whose benefit was I thinking up excuses? Myself? It's just that the alternatives were even worse. The registrar, an old plump man with an impressive mustache and similarly impressive pot belly, stood by the desk patiently penning something down. Registering a clan was abominably simple. You pay 5,000 gold, pick a name for the clan from the list of available names, and you've got your clan. The system automatically generated the emblem, which could be edited later, should you ever get around to it. Then the clan emblem was slotted next to the player names, and that was pretty much it. After paying the required fee, I opened the list of names. Just like player names, clan names had to be unique within each continent. The list of recommended names numbered over 10,000, and I had no idea which filter to use to narrow down my search. Dragon. I tried my luck and saw a message that this name was unavailable. The recommended names of Red-Nosed Dragon and Gold Digger Dragon Killers, and so on, sounded like the products of someone with a small imagination and a big hangover. After going through a couple more possibilities that sounded interesting, I finally gave up. Will I really have to name it? I don't care. I've been playing in Barleona for many years now. I think not. After playing around with name filters and setting them to look for single-word clan names, I looked at the list of names that came up. Fartazans, Floodland, Sea Thistles, Crutonistas. Sea Thistles. Why not? Name of newly created clan, Sea Thistles. Please confirm. There were 2 buttons, yes and no. I could see, of course, that the name sounded stupid and off the wall, but I liked it. Clan Sea Thistles has been created. Clan leader, Mayhen. Current clan level, 1. Next level gained, 20 million clan points. That was that. The registrar handed me a paper confirming my right of clan ownership and returned to his desk. I would have to go and read up in the manual what these clan points were and how to go about getting them.
Due to the presence of players that have earned the first kill achievement in the Mushu dungeon, Clan Sea Thistles receives +2 resource points for all gathering professions, +2% for creating a copy of an object for all crafting professions at no extra resource cost. These properties combine with the properties of other dungeon first kills.
I'll take 2 of those. How could I forget about this? The first kill! Now I saw why Phoenix tried so hard to get at least 1 person with this achievement to join its ranks. At higher profession levels, especially with gathering of diamonds, for example, getting +2 to the gathering resource. I think I want another first kill. After accepting the flower generated by the system as the clan symbol, I went around the profession trainers. First, I dropped by the mining and cartography trainers, where I increased the hardiness and scroll scribe specializations to 10%. The next 5% would come at level 150 of the profession, so it was still some way off. I didn't even bother visiting the cooking and repair trainers. With my level in these professions, there wasn't much for me to do there. Now only jewelcraft remained.
"Welcome! How can I help you at such a late hour?"
A colorful gnome greeted me elaborately. Sporting a red velvet dressing gown tied with a patterned belt, the jeweler constantly fiddled with his beard as if he had no other purpose for his hands. "I've come to be trained," was my simple reply. I had a brief chance to look through the scrolls sent by Evelyn, and not one of them was for someone with a profession level lower than a 100. I was still too much of a beginner for them with my 42 levels.
"Please touch the book," said the trainer, clearly losing interest.
It was strange that only jewelers required you to touch the skill book. Other trainers that I had known managed without it. Not wishing to disappoint the gnome, I put my hands on the book, where some incomprehensible symbols immediately appeared and came together to form a text. The gnome quickly glanced at the emerging lines, turned around, took a step away, and then froze. Extremely slowly, he turned his head again toward the book, took another slow step back, and stared intently at the text. An eternity seemed to go by, no more than a minute in actual fact, before the trainer recovered from the shock. What a strange intellect imitator this NPC has. It seems altogether too involved in playing out the role.
"The cursed artificer that has turned into the blessed artificer. The author of the cursed chess pieces and the orc warriors from the Commandant chess set. The creator of exact copies of the dwarf warriors from the Commandant chess set."
The trainer breathed out loudly, tore his gaze away from the book, and looked at me.
"It's been a while since I've had such an interesting student."
He paused and then said, chuckling,
"With just 42 levels in the profession. Did you level up in your skill only by creating rare and unique items?"
"No, I..."
"It doesn't matter," the jeweler interrupted me. "You've come to learn, and I will teach you. What would you like to know?"
"I need all the recipes for my level, and want to offer you this one." I opened my jewelcraft recipe book, created a scroll with the stone rose recipe, and handed it to the gnome. "I would also like to learn how to sift ore so I can get precious stones from it. I think that's it. The gnome gave me a business-like glance, chuckled, took out a piece of granite from under the counter as if it was just waiting for him there, closed his eyes, and in just a few seconds was holding my rose in his hands.
"Man's stone rose. I can offer 50,000 gold for the recipe right now, or you can get 60 to 70 for it if you put it up for auction. What would you prefer?"
"Send it to the auction house. I'm in no rush to get the money, so no point losing out on the extra 10,000.
"All right."
The scroll and the rose created by the trainer disappeared, and I acquired yet another agreement, this time about the sale of the recipe scroll at the auction house.
"I have no scrolls for someone of your skill level. You should gain at least 10 more levels and come back then. As for the sifting, this isn't that hard to teach. It would be more difficult to actually get any stones out of ore. You may have a decent drop chance for beginner-level precious stones and rare minerals, but getting a sapphire would be near impossible. The percentage chance is just too low. But if you still want it, it'll cost you 10,000 gold.
Your character has acquired a new ability, ore sifting. Requirement, knowledge of the jewelcraft profession. There is some chance of getting a precious stone from the sifted ore. During the sifting, the ore disappears. The chance of getting a precious stone depends on the ore level and the level of jewelcraft profession. Crafting stat bonus. When sifting ore, you have an additional, crafting divided by 5, percentage chance of discovering a precious stone corresponding to the ore level.
Damn! Double damn, even. And here I was thinking that crafting would grant an impressive bonus in this case as well. But it only increased the drop chance by a minute percentage. Only 1 out of 100 siftings might end in success. Or might not, should the dice decide to roll the other way. So it looked like I would have to buy the stones for making the dwarf warriors after all. Speaking of which, teacher, I have one more question. I did create the orc warriors, as you correctly noted, but when I began to make the dwarf warriors, I came out with just copies. Full and exact copies, but still only copies. Why do you think that might be?
What did you make the dwarves out of?
Out of lapis lazuli, as specified in the description.
No. Where did you get it? Did you mine it or buy it?
It was a gift.
So there is your answer, smiled the gnome. The commandant sets can't be made out of bought stones. The person recreating it must gather each stone himself, either from a vein or by sifting, or, as I see in your case, from smelting ingots. You do have crafting, after all. By the way, as soon as you get a second gem cutter, you will be able to craft items that deliver up to +180 bonus to the stats. That's the limitation until you reach a third gem cutter. Anything else?
Thank you. I've found out all that I need to know. I heartily thanked the trainer. I now understood why I ended up with just copies of the dwarves. I had to gather the lapis myself. Anastaria's call caught me as I was about to reach the square, where I had headed straight after leaving the jeweler.
"I'm in the square. Come over."
The solitary figure of the girl could be seen from afar under the lampposts. An occasional player running through the square might almost whistle as they spotted her, but they didn't dare to stop. Anastaria was known to be a cold and discerning beauty. Incredibly, she combined the qualities that most people all too often lack: brains, beauty, and awareness of her abilities. This made her an incredibly dangerous opponent to anyone who might dare challenge her. As far as I knew, there were even special clans named We Love Anastaria and Anastarians, who were ready to shred anyone on her account.
"Looks like you were in no hurry," smiled the girl as soon as I entered the square. "Has being late for a date with a beautiful girl, as you put it, become the norm for modern men?"
"It's one thing if it's a date," I parried. "But there is a zero chance of our meeting to arrange for my robbery of Phoenix passing for a date. And anyway, you have so many admirers that being one of the multitude holds little interest for me."
"One of," Anastaria smiled once again. "I agree. There's little interest for a dragon to be one of anything."
"Look who's talking, oh gorgeous one, vanquisher of sirens," I returned Anastaria's smile, noting with some pleasure that the girl's eyes momentarily widened.
"Oh yes, I completely forgot. When was your birthday? Or is it still to come? I've completely lost track." "It's already been and gone. Last week, in fact."
"Why?" Anastaria stopped, turned around, and stared at me.
"Did you decide to give me a present? Like those cursed chess pieces?"
"Why do you think so ill of me? You're ready to drag up those cursed chess pieces at the drop of a hat. That's not playing nice." I smiled and took the copy of the Dwarf Warriors out of my sack. "I realize I'm late with this, but it comes from the heart." Anastaria was quite a sight. As soon as I took out the figurines, her face became a frozen mask, and only the movement of her brown eyes indicated that she was still here. I decided not to reveal their properties, dragging out the moment of the handover. Stacy was doing her very best to hide her desire to snatch them out of my hands and have a closer look. She could see that these were dwarves well enough. "Here you go." I handed over the chess pieces to the girl and just had enough time to pull back my hand. So swift was the Lady Paladin's move to get them. Did these figurines really mean that much to her?
"Copies?"
The girl's outraged voice seemed to shake the entire city.
"You just palmed me off with copies? You dared to think you'd be let off with copies? And you call this a birthday present?"
"What do you mean, palm off? I've made you a present and now you're screaming at me." I was rather enjoying watching the girl fly into a rage. When she was angry, she became so sweet that it was too easy to forget that one of the most dangerous players in Barleona was standing in front of me. "And you can quit play-acting already. You may make a fine actress, but you're overdoing it a tad. You've been building an Iron Lady reputation for yourself for too long to make the current hysterics all that believable."
"That's not playing nice."
It was like Anastaria was suddenly replaced. In the blink of an eye, she regained a calm and slightly ironic demeanor.
"You're not letting a girl savor the limelight. What if acting was my life's dream, and you simply don't get my moments of inspiration? Do you know why you ended up with copies? I doubt this was what you were aiming for when you were making them."
"Yes, I figured it out."
"Man, we could make one hell of a team. Your inexplicable luck, my resources and analysts, it would be a win-win for everyone. Look at how you grew in Beatwick. Before the battle, you were level 14, and now you've already reached 67. Players like this are highly valued in Phoenix. And what are the sea thistles? Where did they come from? And where did you dig up such a clan, by the way?"
I didn't dig it up. I set it up. For now, I'm its only member. I jokingly pushed out my chest, showing off the great hero that was standing there for all to see. You said that you were interested in the position of a deputy in my clan, so that position is now open. I'm inviting you to join me, but only after I get the four items off Phoenix. Come over. I've got cookies. Anastaria's ringing laugh echoed through Anhur's.
You are the first to try to poach me, chuckled the girl. So you'd better tell me what it is you have that would make me consider your offer.
That's easy. You already know about the cookies, and they're far from trivial. Now you know about the copies of the dwarves, too. What else can I offer you?
I don't even know.
I paused, as if thinking. Ah, this too. I've found the dragons. But I won't be telling where they can be found to just anyone. I even got to know one of them. Well, you saw all that. On the one hand, if I was doing things by the book, I should have completely denied my connection with the dragons. You were all just seeing things. But on the other hand, there were just too many witnesses to our little chat near Beatwick. I think that's it. So, give it a think. I don't offer cookies to just anyone. Anastaria walked next to me in silence for some time, probably gathering her thoughts. Of course, I understood that inviting such a player into my clan looked stupid, at the very least. It's not like she would ever leave Phoenix. She didn't become the head of the clan to swap all that for sea thistles. But one can dream a bit.
It's not enough, finally came the girl's voice. Just a tiny bit more, and you'd be there. What else do you have that would tempt me to leave Phoenix and become a sea thistle?
That's it, I said in surprise. Is everything that I've offered you so far insufficient? You truly are insatiable.
You have a think, and perhaps I'll go for it.
Stacy gave me a serious look.
We're here. If you offer me something else once we leave the Thracinians, it's quite possible that I would agree. Think, shaman.
Is she hinting at the Carmandant chess set? On the one hand, only an idiot wouldn't realize by now that I'm the one that made it. On the other hand, no one has any proof. No, for now, I wouldn't be showing the orc warriors off to anyone. I have a different solution. Despite the late hour, the representatives of the Thracinian faction were still open for business. And really, it's not like NPCs had much else to do.
How can we be of service, Anastaria?
A strange creature addressed the paladin. It had blue skin, two small horns, hooves, and a tail. The Thracinian race was unknown to the wider public. At one point, I spent a considerable amount of time trying to find out who they are. I discovered that they are called Danrai. Apart from that, who they are and what their history was remains unknown.
I would like to buy four items of the highest quality I can access, which would suit this man.
She nodded in my direction.
We need shaman items. Please show us what you have. Phoenix will foot the bill.
Please follow me.
The Danrai addressed me and then turned back to the girl.
Anastaria, please wait here. Would you have some supper while you're waiting for your guest?
What on earth did she do to earn such special treatment? We entered a small room and the Danrai asked me,
What are you interested in?
I need four items. Can you tell me if there is a set among the items of the level that has been made available to me? For a shaman, I added, just in case.
Yes, there is. Please, wait here.
The Danrai pointed me to a sofa in the room that we just entered.
The set will be brought out in a moment.
Just a few minutes later, a young Danrai lady came out, holding gloves, pants, a belt, and, by the looks of it, bracers. Well, well, let's see what we've got.
Shaman pants of Danraic inspiration. Durability, unbreakable. Description, +10 to the maximum level of energy, plus character level 6, intellect, plus character level 3, stamina, plus character level 2, agility, plus character level 4, to defense from all damage types. Item class, scaling set. Level restrictions, no. Set of 2 items, +30 to the maximum level of energy. Set of 4 items, plus character level 10 to intellect, plus character level 10, stamina.
A similar set of stats came with the gloves, the belt, and the bracers. I put the set aside and asked to be shown a few more items, but no combination of 4 ordinary items could ever approach this set. It looked like my choice was made.
I'm taking these.
I pointed to the Danraic inspiration set and then asked my guide,
"Can you tell me why you hold Anastaria in such high regard?"
"The great warrior," replied the Danrai solemnly, "aided my people in gaining knowledge of our world. I cannot tell you more. You should ask her yourself. Thank you for making the choice so quickly. Some free citizens spend up to a few days inside our walls, trying to evaluate every item."
I put on the set and looked at my stats. "Fear me, mere mortals.
1958 stamina and 1958 intellect. That's aside from my still unspent 265 stat points. I was afraid to even think how much such a set might cost."
"Have you come up with something else to interest me?"
asked Anastaria playfully as soon as we left the Thracinians.
"Or have you got nothing else?"
"Nothing," I said with overplayed surprise. "Of course I have something to tempt you with. Like this thing, for example." I took out the Eye of the Dark Widow, which I'd shown off to Evelyn, uncovered its properties, and showed it to Stacy. "But that's just something I have among all the other bits and pieces."
After she saw the eye's properties, the girl's face once again turned into an unreadable mask.
"So, will you come over?" I asked. "I have a lot of stuff like this. I just don't have anyone who's able to utilize it."
2 million gold, clean, free of your tax, and the boosting of your entire clan to level 120, including all those that you invite. Half of the loot that we'll get in the raid will be yours."
Stacy immediately found her bearings and started to bombard me with offers for buying the eye. "Strange. Is it really that valuable? In that case, I'm a damned fool for showing it off now, and not after I reached level 100. "It's not for sale. I've already declined Evelyn, and I will refuse you too. The eye is only for the Sea Thistles clan. So, you decide." I smiled once again. "The place of the deputy is free and awaits you."
"Send me an invite."
Anastaria's calm voice stopped me dead in my tracks.
What on earth is "send me an invite" supposed to mean? Is she for real? Or is she calling my bluff?
I opened the interface of the invitations to the clan, selected Anastaria, and sent her a clan invite, specifying the position of the deputy head. The probability that she was bluffing was just too high. So I wasn't too worried. Leaving Phoenix for Sea Thistles. Her own clan would shoot her on the spot.
Player Anastaria has joined the Sea Thistles clan. Rank, deputy head of the clan. Clan achievement gained, 100's no limit. Clan achievement gained, 200 in my sights. Clan achievement gained, 300's no myth. Due to the presence of players that earned the first kill of the Bloody Scythe dungeon, the Sea Thistle clan gains, the speed of energy regeneration for all clan members increased by 10%. The speed of hit point regeneration for all clan members increased by 10%. These properties combine with other properties of other dungeon first kills. Due to the presence of players that earned the first kill of the Dungeon of Fear, the Sea Thistles clan gains...
And then follow the list of 25 first kills, giving bonuses to all clan members.
"And now, Mayan, we will sign an agreement," purred Anastaria, looking pleased. "You can't have any secrets from your deputy. Otherwise, it would be the wrong sort of clan."
Chapter 3 Anhurs. Everyone knows the expression, turn to stone. Although it was something I thought impossible, it looked like this was a time for all preconceptions to come crashing down. Anastaria had joined Sea Thistles as deputy head of the clan. Aside from the fact that both Phoenix and the admirers of this sweet scoundrel will have my head for this, even if I wanted to, I wouldn't be able to remove her from the clan for the next 3 months. The leaders are closely linked to their clan, so they have to be chosen very carefully. From the moment they're appointed, it isn't possible to disband the clan, not as long as it contains someone else holding the deputy head position. Something was telling me that my little joke had landed me in a whole world of trouble.
"Stacy, what are you up to?"
I attempted to recover from the shock, regain my composure, and try to wriggle out of the situation. Transferring from one clan to another was nothing out of the ordinary, and players often switched their membership, which is why the leading clans introduced salaries and offered bonuses, such as places in exclusive raids, in order to keep their core team together. People are the most important resource in Barleona, and can become the object of stiff competition. The structure of any clan is very simple. Head, deputy, treasurer, castle owner, and normal members. This standard setup can be changed at any time after a chat with the registrar. I decided not to complicate things and left the standard structure in place. I could review it once other people started to join. Now then, because any player may leave the clan at any time, the clan founder, in this case me, would sign a temporary agreement with the hired players covering the exchange of information, joint exploits, leveling up, access to resources, and other game-related things. Moreover, as far as I know, such agreements are not signed with everyone, but only with players of some importance to the clan. I was frantically trying to remember everything that I knew about clans, when Anastaria said, looking pleased,
"Deputy Head, you know, it's the first time this has happened to me, to be so dramatically demoted in the gaming social ladder, from the head of the best clan in Malabar to a deputy of a new and completely unknown clan. You owe me a cookie."
"Stacy, you didn't answer me. Despite the apparent recklessness of your decision, I don't believe you've made it on the spur of the moment. That's not the kind of person you are. So do please spill the beans on what's going on and why you accepted my invitation. And what's with the dirty hints about the absence of secrets between clan members and the disappointment of the heralds? Are you trying to call my bluff?"
Let's go to the Golden Horseshoe for dinner and for a chat, Bossling. We will spend at least 3 months together, so it's time you put all your cards on the table. I bet you've never been inside the horseshoe. I'll pay.
As soon as we stepped inside the tavern, we were dressed in the compulsory evening attire. I looked at Anastaria and was stunned. A glamorous, dark, figure-hugging dress showing considerable cleavage, an ideally matching necklace, the hairstyle. I was looking at the embodiment of every man's dream. If she's anything like her gaming avatar in reality, all the top suitors in the world would be fighting over her.
"Can I be of assistance?"
A waiter had materialized next to us, but couldn't help staring at Anastaria wide-eyed. "I need a table for my lady friend and myself," I said, beating her to it, and eliciting another astonished stare from the girl. "What, something else you didn't know about? Surprise!"
"Please follow me,"
the waiter directed us towards the depths of the hall. I don't know why, but I offered Anastaria my arm, which she accepted without hesitation, and we followed the waiter, like a model couple. The hall was almost deserted. Only a couple of tables were occupied. There sat the tavern's patrons, surrounded by domes of silence and distortion. The Golden Horseshoe looked after the virtual secrets of its guests. I pulled out a chair, helping Anastaria to sit down, and, having once again sent my silent gratitude to Clowder for his lessons, started to look through the menu. As I pretended to concentrate on choosing the dishes, I tried to think through the impending conversation. Arguing with Anastaria in the street would have been very bad form. It's not like we're little children or anything, screaming and stamping our feet all over the place. I realize that there are pros and cons for the clan as a result of the presence of such a member. So first, I would like to understand what it is that Phoenix wants, and then decide which of these things I'm prepared to give up.
You have access to the Golden Horseshoe.
That was more of a statement than a question from Anastaria. When ordering, I hadn't even looked at the names of the dishes in the menu and just picked the first thing at random. So I was now staring at some long, blue sticks that were wriggling for some reason. Had I not spent time in the mines, just the sight of them would have been nauseating, let alone imagining eating something like that. But after the monumental mass of green goo that we were fed at Pryke, any food would look appetizing. Of course, why on earth shouldn't I? I emphasized the last word. Have access to this place. Since we're talking now, please do explain the performance that you put on earlier and what I can now expect from Phoenix.
Performance? Expect from Phoenix?
Anastaria pointedly raised an eyebrow, as if she had no clue what I was talking about.
You offered me to switch clans, and I agreed.
She gets 0 points for that. It really has been a difficult day today, and it doesn't look like it's going to get better anytime soon. And tomorrow, I'll have to meet up with the guys and explain to them why I invited someone into the clan without giving them any say on it, and why I immediately offered her the position of deputy head. Stacy, let's talk plainly now. I do, of course, understand that you may leave at any time, but as head of the clan, I have a whole day to flesh out an agreement with you, which will include a point about your compulsory presence in the clan for the next 3 months, during which I cannot remove you.
Care to refresh my memory on what's scheduled to happen in the next 3 months?
If I remember correctly, this will be the period of preparation for the inter-clan competition, time which you will not spend within Phoenix. Are you prepared for this?
Blackmail really doesn't become you.
And your words about the wrong sort of clan weren't blackmail?
How I hate all these negotiations.
The girl leant back into her chair.
It's a lot more interesting to solve the developers' puzzles, come up with plans for successful dungeon runs, or explore Barleona's history. Right now, I'm sitting here doing my best to look all aloof and mysterious. No one approved my leaving. Eckler has already contacted me and said he'll have my head if I don't return to the clan before the other players find out. So I'll be in your clan right up until the moment we leave the horseshoe. Then I'll ditch you most unceremoniously. Why on earth did I do it?
Anastaria fell silent and stared at her plate of food. Information. I completed her thought. You need information. But why do you need information about a mere 67-level player? Compared to you, I'm a total nobody and a noob.
You want me to tick off the points on my fingers for you? I'll do it. I'm not too proud. The Carmandant chess set. The cursed chess pieces. Taking part in the Cartus launch scenario. Possession of information on dragons? Possession of a key to another world? Inexplicable immunity to my poison? Speaking of which, how? And access to the Golden Horseshoe to top it all off. So there you are. The fingers of one hand were insufficient to count the ways in which you differ from a noob. I thought that in the moment of euphoria from getting such a player to join your clan, you'd spill the beans on at least some of these things. I'm sorry. I formed a mistaken opinion where your brains are concerned. I'm honest, as you can see. I really do want to get information on all these things, which is why I risked taking such a step. I simply improvised. Player Anastaria has left the Sea Thistles clan. The Sea Thistles clan loses the following bonuses from the first kill.
Just a few seconds later, the emblem of Phoenix appeared next to the girl's name. Anastaria returned to her clan.
Key to another world? What are you on about?
I decided to clarify a point that had been bothering me.
The eye that you showed me. This quest takes place both in Barleona and in the world to which the tarantulas departed. I could be wrong, but judging by similar quests, we would first have to kill a priest who intends to bring back the old ones, then activate the eye and jump to the other world, where we would meet up with the spiderlings of doom and show them the error of their ways. At the end of the quest, each member gets an amulet that usually grants an extra 5 to 10 levels to a character, and a certain amount of reputation with the Emperor. And the first kill, of course. The usual stuff.
I see. Thanks. Well, since we're off to such a good start, can you explain to me why you need the Carmandant chess set?
Aside from the fact that it's an exceptionally unique item in the game, it unlocks access to the founder of this world. According to the information we've obtained, the cave that contains the creator, or whoever he left behind him, also contains the very best bonuses in the game. This is somewhere I'd very much like to see, so I'm prepared to pay a lot for an entry ticket. Until all the elements of the chess set are put together, it's of little use. Access is only possible when this takes place. The path to the place where the chess set can be activated is veiled in riddles contained in each type of chess piece. The first is contained in the orcs. Have you solved it?
Why are you telling me all this? I shrewdly